Namaste friends, welcome to Virat Hindustan Sangam's Words of Wisdom Gyan Ganga on our various social media channels. Today is episode 198 and we will be discussing what's ailing the archaeological survey of India, and for the next half an hour to 45 minutes we will be discussing with Dr. Subramaniam Swami and Padma Shri K.K. Mohammed. As you all know, Mr. K.K. Mohammed has appeared in our program in the past. He is a Kerala born and is an Indian archaeologist who served on the regional as the regional director north of the Archaeological Survey of India, which is popularly known as the ASI. And during his career, he undertook many things, but the most important thing which he will be remembered was for the remarks or the report on the remnants of a temple under the Babri Masjid. With other associates, he had mentioned about this many decades ago, and he has been associated with the Bateshwar complex in Madhya Pradesh, which is a complex of more than 200 ancient Shiva and Vishnu temples situated about 40 kilometers from Gwalior. And he has been associated with this project, and he had recently written an autobiography in Malayalam, which was later translated into English. And there are numerous aspects of him. He is a very fierce nationalist, and people look forward to him on archaeological matters, to him for advice. And he now is, after his retirement, is residing in Kerala. I have to thank our viewers for their support week after week. Last week's episode on Rahul Gandhi's US visit, we had a viewership of 2,46,085 viewers across the globe on various social media channels. So with these words, it's welcoming Mr. K.K. Mohammed to our program. And with this Dr. Swami introductory remarks, we'll take the program forward. Jai Hind.
Pleasure to have K.K. Mohammed, because at a time when we were all very doubtful about the Ram Mandir matter proceeding ahead, he came on the press. He was on TV. He was speaking about the excavations, which gave a lot of strength to all of us. So I would say that his contribution to Ram Mandir becoming a reality, he should be remembered in our history as a man who very courageously put forward the facts, the diggings that took place, the technology that was used to come to a conclusion. And so it's therefore today a great pleasure to see him again in our program. Now, today we are not so much on this monument and that monument. Yes, we will like to hear about him on his reactions to the same. But the core thing is that is the Archaeological Survey of India functioning as the way it should do for a country with an enormous past. And we have yet not, got a comprehensive history of our past, free from imperialist influence and people writing whatever they want to run us down. All these are now parts of our textbooks. So we need now to get to the situation where we get to know about the past. So the Archaeological Survey of India, which I think was set up in 1861, and then of course the act itself was in 1958, which laid down the procedures that have to be followed. So it's a 162-year-old setup, Archaeological Survey of India, but it has suffered from two main problems, which according to me I've seen in writings and so on, bring it to the notice of K.K. Mohammed. Padma Shri K.K. Mohammed, I should say, he's a decorated man now, having received the Padma Shri. So one is that there is a problem about recruitment. where the expertise has been given the go-by. And this I have discussed with the then minister for Patel, and also I had one major meeting and the question of the Ram Setu issue. So there, the officials also expressed a number of views in an informal talk there. So first of all, there is a definite period when the left wing, with notable exceptions like K.K. Mohammed and of course his senior, and so. Except that the left influence was tremendous in the ASI, and that meant what should be investigated, what should not be investigated, and that has created a big void just now. Now there's also a fancy for foreign funding. I don't know how valuable he thinks. I'd like to hear from K.K. Mohammed. For instance, Aga Khan has given a lot of money. The ASI, and there is an increasing tendency to get money from outside so that the bureaucracy of the government gets minimized, and therefore people play their own roles in furthering the focus of the ASI. The Ram Setu is an example where Archaeological Survey of India should have played a major role. They had played a role in the case of Manjoli Island, where Krishna was supposed to have danced with the ladies there, and that is now being declared as a UNESCO heritage area, whereas the Ram Setu still has not been declared as a heritage area, although it's a marvel, it's a real marvel. And you can see that it's a bridge that was built. What was written in the Ramayana, you can see in real life, like that, for example, the rock. It's not really a rock. It's actually the merger, fusing of shells and so on. They come and they, I think, there's another name for it. That is described in the Ramayana, and you can see it in real life. It floats, so you have to stick it in with the bridge for it to function as a stent. So these are things which need to be brought on focus. So finally, let me, before handing over, say that I was given to the understanding that there's a lot of corruption, there is a lot of looting and so on. And 500 plus FIRs have been registered, but not one there has been an action. This is something that somebody told me, and K.K. Mohammed can put me wise to what the correct position is. Then there's a rising non-experts recruitment that is taking place. And that's very serious. I mean, a person like K.K. Mohammed, you see, they should be subject to the normal retirement rules. There are people who should then be made into consultants, and then they should be able to continue to guide the institutions. I'm saying this not only for K.K. Mohammed, but I'm sure he knows many others who are very able, who had to retire under the government rules. And then there's been a fair amount of artifact smuggling. I myself know of a minister who was in charge, he was from Madhya Pradesh. He was a very senior congressman, and in fact, the ASI lady who was then heading it had to suffer a lot, including physical damage, because she was trying to block him engaging in this antique smuggling, exporting, and so on and so forth. It was a very, very, very lucrative thing. And finally, you see, there's been now an increasing tendency to outsource to rich people, rich persons, like I gave you the example of Aga Khan. I think the reason is to get out of the structure of the ASI while using the base of the ASI. So in all these things, I would like, amongst the other remarks that he would choose to make and freely make, there's no agenda as such, but I would like him to give an opinion that how are we doing with ASI and what are the things that we need to do to make it a more effective organization for our own heritage purposes. Over to you, Mr. Mohammed.
Well, Dr. Swami, let me quick, just 1 second. Dr. Swami, to start off, based on what you've just told us, to start off, so we'll, the contribution of Mr. K.K. Mohammed and his predecessor, the great B.B. Lal, started off in the excavation of Ayodhya. So the role that the erstwhile, institution that was under the guidance of great B.B. Lal, they have done phenomenal excavations and discoveries. So, if, Mr. Mohammed, before you get into this main topic, can you give us an idea as to how the role that was great has got deteriorated so much? So, basically, the main role, let's take three examples. Ayodhya, whatever is happening in the Gyanwapi thing, and Mathura. So, if you don't mind, give us a brief on those three, and then we can shift, then we can move on to what is ailing the archaeological survey.
So thank you very much, sir, for giving me an opportunity to speak freely. Because I'll be speaking very freely. I don't attach to this party or that party. So coming to Ayodhya, because it was in the year 1976-77, I had gone for the excavation at Ayodhya under Professor B.B. Lal. Because it was he who was the Director General of Archaeological Survey of India. And then he took premature retirement. And then he was teaching in the universities. Later on, in the Simla Advanced Institute also. So while before excavation, what we do is we will be going to, for an exploration all around the monument where we are going to excavate. So it was during that period where we went inside the mosque, that controversial mosque at that time. We were stopped at the gate, and then we told them that, we don't have any kind of problem. We are just researchers. We have come for the research work. Please allow us to get in. So when I went inside, I saw that the so-called mosque was standing on 12 temple pillars. So the question is, how do you know that it is a temple pillars or, it's some mosque pillars or some church pillars? Actually, we are precisely being trained for that. And we would be able to tell you, the approximate date also, whether it belongs to 11th century, 12th century, 13th century. So that is because of our duty of training. And when Professor Lal excavated, just behind the mosque, that is, the western part of the mosque, there he got the pillar bases on which these pillars were standing. And on the southern part also, he got the same kind of thing. And then along with that one, he got a number of antiquities which was associated with the temple, not with the mosque. So it was on the basis of all these things, at that time he had come to the conclusion that before the mosque, there was a temple. And this thing, because it was at that time, it was not a very big issue also. But right from 1988 onwards, it became a very big issue. Many Adwanijis Padayatra started, VSP came in. And it became a very big issue. It was the communist historians at that time who had gone to the press and said, see, Professor Lal has excavated the place and he did not get anything associated with the temple. So there is no question of the place being handed over to Hindus. That was their statement. And none of them were archaeologists, number one. None of them had visited the site during the excavation because, throughout the excavation, I was there. I had not seen any of these people. And later on also, they did not claim that they had gone to the site. So it was, I mean, without, because, no, but they had a lot of press connections. An archaeologist is mostly an introvert, but historians are mostly extrovert. They had a lot of connection with the English press also. So it was at that time, Professor Lal had to defend himself. And he said, no, we have excavated and we got many things associated with the temples. And I was at that time, I was working in Madras. I was in Fort St. George. I gave a statement, which of course it was, now it seems it was a very dangerous statement, because there was no hope that BJP would ever come to power at that time. It was in 1990. I gave a statement. I was the only Muslim who had participated in the excavation. And I have seen the temple pillars here also, and the temple pillar bases which was excavated, and also the antiquities that was excavated. And then I added one more thing, that this is this Ram Janmabhoomi, this is as important for Hindus as Makkah and Medina are for Muslims. So Muslims should willingly hand it over to Hindu community for constructing a huge, magnificent temple. That was my statement. And believe me, sir, that there was no reply at all from the Marxist group of people who otherwise they would have gone to the bazaar. There was absolutely, there was silence. There was no reply at all from their side. But later on, Professor Irfan Habib, in 1919, he gave a statement that I was not a part of the excavation team at all. And there was one more male person. He gave a statement that I was not a part of the excavation team. And there is another professor in Aligarh Muslim University, Nadeem Rizvi. And he said, habitually he speaks lies. He is that kind of professor. He gave another statement, you know, that K.K. Mohammed was not at all part of this excavation team. And then Professor Lal had to give another statement. No, he was part of the excavation team. And also there were some more people who had participated in the excavations, and they also gave their statement, no, K.K. Mohammed was part of the excavation. And he was, throughout that time in the excavation, he was there. So it is this way these people are, I mean, trying their level best to, I mean, this one, I mean, to lead people into wrong, they are supplying the wrong information. So in any kind of dialogue, the best thing is that the dialogue should be in between the Muslim community and the Hindu community, and you have to set these people, that is the Marxist historians, apart. Because if they are there, you know, they are neither the subject experts, they are all historians, they don't visit the site also, and then they come out with this kind of opinion. So we have to be very careful that we should keep them away in any kinds of dialogue. And coming to the two other things, that is Gyanvapi, and also this one, that is, I mean, our Mathura. Of course, you are a legal pundit and you know what is the Religious Worship Act of 1991. I don't want to comment anything upon that one. Otherwise, my feeling is that, and my opinion is that these two places also should be handed over by the Muslim community to construct a magnificent temple for the Hindu community. Because as I said earlier, this is again as important for Hindu community as Makkah and Medina are for Muslim. The whole development of the Hindu community, I mean Hinduism, it started from all these three important places. So there should have been, for Muslim, it is neither associated with Prophet Muhammad. Had it been associated with Prophet Muhammad, I too would have sided with them. It is not associated with the Khulafa or Rashidin, that the four important caliphs of Islam, the second most important people, I would have been with them. It is not associated with any of these great Sufi saints, like Khwaja Nizamuddin Awliya, then we have that the great Muinuddin Chishti, or many other people. So had it been associated with those people also, we would have been there with along with them. It is simply a mosque. They could take their mosque to any other places, but a Hindu cannot take these three places, or he cannot replace it. So these things, the Muslim community should understand. and many were, I mean, understanding it also, but it was these people who created, especially Irfan Habib from Aligarh Muslim University. It was he who was behind all many of these things, himself and the JNU historians also. So this is my humble submission that Muslims should think of all these things. They should come out because you just cannot expel Muslim community from India. That Hindu should realize we have to live, harmoniously. And for that, there should be some kind of adjustment from both the communities. And more adjustment should come from the Muslim community. It's only they have to do it. And the Hinduism, even otherwise also, it's a very tolerant religion. And I often say that if you want any religion in future, and that too a kind of accommodative religion, because whether you worship Shiva or not, whether you worship Vishnu or not, you don't go to the temple, even then also you are a Hindu. Such an accommodative religion. Muslims should have taken advantage out of this thing, and we should build a very strong India. That is my appeal to Muslim community.
You finished or you still have some more to say?
No, I'm sorry. That is the beginning, because our main topic is...
See, first of all, you mentioned a very important point about the Places of Worship Act. And I have a petition pending in the Supreme Court. It has been heard briefly. It has been accepted. It means it's been admitted. And we have to perhaps in July, August, go through it. Now, there are people who say abolish this act altogether. It's obnoxious, this thing, and so on. There are some points on the constitutional aspects, which there is some justification, but I am not on that. I'm on the question as to what is it that Hindus now want. Hindus have been saying for a long time, and then all the sadhus, sannyasis of eminence came together under Swami Chinmayananda, and there their decision was taken that of all the temples that were demolished, and there about 40,000 at least that we know that were demolished by various invaders, there are only three which cannot be built anywhere else. And that was the argument on which I revived the Ram Janmabhoomi case, which was lying in for 8 years without being taken up. In the Allahabad High Court, said 1/3 to Muslims and 2/3 to Hindus. Neither wanted that. So yes. They both came to the Supreme Court. And for 8 years, there was not a single hearing. And Ashok Singhal, who was those days very... sick and probably began to sense that he may not last long. He asked me to take it over, and I suddenly came upon the idea, what's so special about Ram Mandir? Because there's so many Ram Mandirs around the country. Why are we insisting on this one Ram Mandir? Because that was where Ram was born. And that's a faith. I mean, there's no need for proof. Just like there's no need for proof that Muhammad went to from Al-Aqsa, he went on a horse up to the island. There's no proof, but there's a faith, and you can't change that. Same thing of Christ being in Bethlehem, that's also faith. It was somebody's dream, some queen of Italy or something, Rome, who dreamt that Christ was born there. So these are faith matters. The same faith was there that Ram was born in Ayodhya, in a particular spot where the masjid stood. So therefore, masjid, as you said, can go anywhere. You can even read namaz on a open road, or you can read on your drawing room, you can read on the aeroplane. Namaz is a place where, except one or two exceptions you mentioned, generally speaking, in countries, Muslim countries, they demolished masjids for building roads, because it is the only place to read namaz, and namaz can be read anywhere else. So therefore, the argument was, this is a mosque which can be somewhere else, and Ram Mandir is actually Ram Janmabhoomi Mandir, that has to be made separate. Now, coming to, before I hand over to my other colleagues, there are two other things you mentioned, that is Kashi Vishwanath and
Yadvapi.
Gyan to separate from what Ahilya Bai built in the site was a temporary alternative to Gyan Vyapi. There's a Kashi Vishwanath temple today functioning in Varanasi, but that's not the original one. The original one is a Gyan Vyapi where a huge masjid stands. Now, that is the place where Lord Shiva himself came and planted a Jyotirling. Of the 12 Jyotirlings, the last one was Somnath. Somnath, Sardar Patel saw to it, was built. It was demolished by Mohammad Ghori. And there were some others also had come. So that's over. So now we have only one Jyotirling, and that is the Gyan Vyapi one. And a mosque can be built somewhere else, because this is not a mosque which has any special significance that can be moved. In fact, you don't build mosques. Muslims don't build mosques on demolished mandirs as a rule. But Aurangzeb had observed, and I've seen some writing on it, that since the Kashi Vishwanath Gyan Vyapi temple has been built already three times after demolition, so this time they should not be able to rebuild. So therefore, the mosque should be built on where the temple stood. And that's how the temple was built. Now, that can also be shifted. There's nothing in Islam that would affect shifting. Same thing with where Krishna was born. There's a mosque right on top of where we believe by faith over centuries that Krishna was born there. So if these three are okay, then the Places of Worship Act can remain. And as of 15th September, August 1947, so, what was there is what was there will remain. The other 40,000 temples which were demolished, there the only thing that is sacred is the Prana Pratishtha Puja of the idol. So the idol can be moved, but idol cannot be replaced, in the sense you can't build another idol. So the temple is, it's not required that the temple should be built where it was originally there, and now a mosque stands there, or it's a demolished area. The temple can be built anywhere, and the image should be taken there. So that can be resolved. This 40,000 things can be easily resolved. And as was decided by these sadhus and sannyasis that only three need to be restored, that is what is there in the today in the Supreme Court. And I'm looks like from the comments that I've received, although other hotheads are very angry with me for saying only three. But I think the Priest of Pure Worship Act is necessary. And the only amendment is that instead of one exception in the act, which is Ram Janmabhoomi, there should be three exceptions. And that happens. Okay.
Mr. Mohammed, now coming to the topic of the day. So given it's a great past, archaeological survey of India's great past, what is ailing today? I mean, what has happened, at least give us in the past seven, eight years, what has gone wrong, and what can be the good remedy? Because as Dr. Swami highlighted, they are not doing their main job of even assisting. I mean, even though Dr. Swami has won the case in the court as far as Ram Sethu is concerned, and there are so many things that are so apparent, as you have described, in all the other places of, I mean, the two critical places. Let's take the Gyan Vyapi of Kashi, or even in the in Mathura. What is ailing the archaeological survey of India today?
So, before coming to that question, my humble submission is, I mean, we should make an exception for these three. That is one, this one, Gyan Vyapi, and this thing. And we should not make any other claims, because, you know, that will create a lot of problem for the country.
Correct.
Because for us, the country is the most important thing. So, we should persuade those hotheads of Hindus also. You be patient. Let us come to a kind of understanding. That should be the attitude of our, Hindu saints and savants, they should come forward for that one. So coming to Archaeological Survey of India, it was a very powerful and very, very good organization earlier. And I worked in Archaeological Survey of India for 24 years. And before that, I mean, for 10 years, I was an Aligarh Muslim University. So I knew Archaeological Survey of India very closely. And it was a very vibrant organization also. But since the last 9 years, it is in a highly deplorable condition. Highly deplorable condition, because we have never seen the SI in such a terrible condition. When Modiji came, we all, I mean, expected, you know, this department, which gave a new lease of life to the country. Because, you know, the country was almost for 500 years, we were under this one, I mean, this important issue of Ram Mandir. And Archaeological Survey of India played a very eminent role in solving that one. So we just all thought that, I mean, at least BJP and RSS would be thankful to Archaeological Survey of India. They would be grateful to Archaeological Survey of India. And they would be, I mean, further, I mean, trying to rejuvenate the whole organization. But that was this one magnificent delusion. I call it a magnificent delusion. Because, you know, earlier the Congress government, during the Congress period, it was working far, far better than that of the BJP government period. And especially in the, I mean, initial 5 years, what happened is, because earlier we were having a superintending archaeologist would be the most important working man at one particular site. And he had a financial power of 25 lakhs. With that 25 lakhs, he would be taking up the important conservation work of a place. For example, if it is Brihadishwara temple, or if it is Kanchipuram temple, or if it is the temples of this one, Hampi, or Taj Mahal, Agra Fort, Fatehpur Sikri, by using this amount, this 25 lakhs of rupees for each monument, he could carry out the conservation work of that particular monument. But what happened is, during the BJP period government, that 25 lakhs of rupees, that was reduced to 3 lakhs of rupees, and all other estimates should go to Delhi. I mean, full concentration of power. So the whole body became, the ASI became a completely paralyzed body. We took up, many of us took up this question too with so many people, both in RSS also and both in BJP also. But they did not, I mean, pay any attention to it. So it was after giving a lot of, I mean, because even I also, I mean, took up, not only spoke with some of the most important people in RSS, but also then I wrote a letter also, an email also. And then after a very long time it was, of course, because, you know, the whole organization was shrinking and the whole organization was in this one, I mean, dangerous condition. Then many people felt it and they also took up the issue. And then that earlier, this one was, not only that was revived, and it was the amount which could be spent, the financial power was increased also. It was made 50 lakhs of rupees, and that was very essential. But by that time, they had completely, I mean, killed the organization, that is the Archaeological Survey. And then what they did is, because, you know, ASI has got two conservation things. One is the structural conservation. What is the structural conservation? That is the monument proper. If it is Taj Mahal, Taj Mahal, take up the conservation of Taj Mahal. If it is Brihadishwara temple, take up the conservation of that. And then that the peripheral work is there, that is making toilet, boundary wall, and then this, that is known as peripheral. And these things were given to certain organization who made, I mean, inflated estimates. Inflated estimate means some of these toilets were costing 90 lakhs of rupees. How many people go to Tughlaqabad? And there are two such 90 lakh toilets. How many people go there? Yeah. And no, that was, I mean, just to help the contractors. Very plainly, it is just to help the contractors. You have the great Hampi. You have the Pan Supari Bazaar of Hampi. You have the Virupaksha Temple, the Bazaar of Hampi. It is in, I mean, pell-mell in many of them. Why couldn't you spend this kind of amount on those things? And in Bateshwar is a place where I had worked. along with the Chambal dacoit, Narvai Singh Gujjar and other people, they helped us. There I have been able to reconstruct 80 temples. It's a record. 80 temples I have. I mean, that is also not simple repair work. It was completed, the whole thing had fallen down in a huge earthquake. And from there, we have reconstructed 80 temples. And during the entire BJP period, please note it, sir, and please underline, during the entire BJP period of 9 years, not a single temple has been reconstructed there. And this is the deplorable condition of Archaeological Survey of India during BJP period. Whom to blame? Whether BJP or RSS? I squarely blame RSS. Because, you know, BJP means, I mean, they are like any other political party. We don't give any kind of respect for them. It should have been taken up by RSS, but they did not. This is the whole condition. And the infrastructure of Archaeological Survey of India also. That is crumbling. That's crumbling. Because you don't have enough officers. You don't have enough workers. At various places, you know, there are not many proper engineers. You don't have proper archaeologists. Many of these places, like our the great Hastinapura, that should be re-excavated again because it was done by Professor Vibila long back. And he came out with certain, I mean, very good results also. And the whole Upanishadic land of Hastinapura, and you have got the great Mathura, you have got the Mithila, the great Mithila, Mithila of Janaka. All these things, they should be taken up and they should be explored, excavated, and presented in such a way so that, you know, people can come from different parts of the world. But I'm so sorry to say that BJP has neither a vision nor a practical dynamic person. Nor RSS. They don't have any visionary people for all these things. Nor any dynamic officer. That is what is lacking. While I was in Delhi, because, you know, at that time I got only this one, 20 lakhs of rupees during the Commonwealth period. That means for 2 years, for each year, I will be getting 10 crores of rupees and for the next one. So not only I carried out this one conservation work of the 46 monument, apart from that, I mean, I also got 40 acres of this one land, which was not earlier with Archaeological Survey of India. And 1 acre is just in front of the Chandani Chowk itself. What would be the astronomical cost of it? Astronomical. This is how you can reconstruct Archaeological Survey of India. Archaeological Survey of India is such a big elephant who does not know its real strength because of its fan-shaped, this one, I mean, ear. So similarly, archaeological, I mean, people, they do not know, realize it. Make it a vibrant organization and market your heritage. I'll give you one example because this Lord Buddha, I mean, after his demise, his body was cremated and this body ashes were given to 8 places. That is, I mean, most important places with which Lord Buddha was associated. And that is put in a relic casket. It is known as relic casket. And that is the most important and most holiest thing for a Buddhist. So, and such a relic casket has been excavated at Piprava. Piprava is the modern Kapilavastu. So I made a similar one and then placed holy grains from 2-4 important places. A similar one, it is a replica of the same thing with the same kind of stone. And my cost was only 500 rupees at that time. And any Buddhist, he would be taking such a similar one. And I mean, he would be taking it for 5,000 rupees. See, just different. My cost is only 400 rupees. And he would be taking it 4,000 rupees if you place grains from few places like Bodh Gaya, Kushinagar, and few other places. And this way, you can sell your heritage like anything. But there is no thinking in Archaeological Survey of India. Our ministers are also like that one. And officials are also like that one. So what you have to do, what we have to do is that you have to rejuvenate the whole archaeological survey, shake up it, give them proper manpower, because that is one thing is very lacking. manpower is essential and the infrastructure is essential. Make it a vibrant organization and present your the heritage of the country in such a way, an attractive way, like other countries are doing. And Buddhist heritage is being sold by China better than us. Buddhist heritage is being sold by Sri Lanka than us. That is what is happening. And similarly, that is the whole country. But I don't know whether the government would ever realize it. And the worst part is, I mean, it was the most deplorable condition was not during the Congress period, it is during the BJP period.
Dr. Swami, you have any questions, further questions or comments?
No, I think he has addressed all the questions that I had posed in his own way, and he's done it very nicely and very, very beautifully. And I think this is something we can. I wonder if Jagdish has anything to add.
Yes.
To
Jagdish, you go ahead.
Mr. KK Mohammed, some of our viewers have put out a question, which is also what is appearing in the newspapers. ASI takes over lot of religious places as part of the archaeological act or whatever that act is.
Yeah.
But worship is not allowed at many of these temples, especially yeah. temples. So yeah. I want to know what exactly is the situation, because those places are places of worship. They are declared as protected monument. But why yeah. is worship not allowed? In fact, there's a report, I think, which you must have seen in the last few days. At some places, the monuments or the idols are stolen away because there is no worship. So various factors are there. But why is worship not allowed at these sites?
I would like to make it clear that there is no discrimination against Hindu community. The case is the same thing with Christian, this one also, Christian religious places also, like Goa. And this is the same thing like this one, I mean, Muslim religious worship places also. The rule of the Archaeological Survey of India is at the time of, you know, at the time of taking over a particular monument, whether it is Mahabalipuram temple, whether it is Brahadishwara temple, at the time of taking over, or at the time of taking over of some Islamic monument or of Goan monument, that is Christian monument, if prayer was there, only that prayer would be allowed. If puja was there, only that puja would be allowed. And after that, after taking over the monument, and no new puja would be allowed, no new prayer of either Muslim community or Hindu community would not be allowed. For example, in Agra Fort, you have a mosque, but the prayer is not allowed there. And similarly, in Delhi Fort also, there is a mosque, but prayer is not allowed there. So the Hindu community should not nurse any grievance that they are being discriminated. It is the role of Archaeological Survey of India, and that is very good also. For example, in Quwwatul Islam Mosque, that is near Qutub Minar, it has been, I mean, constructed, this Quwwatul Islam Mosque has been constructed by destroying 27 Jain and Hindu temples. Now, and then later on it became a Muslim mosque also. Now, whom are you going to allow? Hindus or Muslim? So our rule is at the time of taking over, if there was a temple, I mean, if there was puja, only that would be allowed. And if there was a prayer, that would be allowed. That's all. So that is a very good law also. And they should not nurse any Hindu community, should not nurse any grievance that they are being discriminated. It's not like that. It is the rule of the government of India.
No, Mr. KK Mohammed, the question is not, my question, in fact, was that none of them are allowed. I mean, there yeah. is no discrimination. That's a good thing. But the question yeah. is, unlike the Muslim Islam, unlike Islam, a temple which is established with a prana pratishtha puja, is always a temple, whether it is under ASI, whether it was under Akbar, or whether it is under Narendra Modi, it is always a temple. A mosque and people can pray anywhere else. So what is saying is, suppose some temple has been discovered in the jungle or in some place which is not accessible or something or the other, but it is a temple. Our temples were not decorative pieces, but a place of worship with a prana pratishtha puja. So why this this finer point is not taken, looked after either by the government or ASI? Or is there no thinking on this issue? I mean, I'm not against mosques and all that, yes, but yes. I'm saying is this Prana Pratishtha Puja and the importance of temple is different from a mosque.
See, we cannot give any kind of exception to any particular community. And that should be taken up by Swamiji himself. He is the legal scholar. So it would be taken up by him. But I mean, we should not, because I face the same kind of question which you raised from Govan community. From Govan community, because, you know, there are two different churches there, that is, say, Cathedral Church and Bom Jesus, where the prayer was going on. But few people, they wanted to, I mean, start prayer in this one, in St. Francis Church. And also, and there was another temple there on the top of it, and St. Kajitan also. I was the superintending archaeologist. I opposed it. So, but they said, no, I mean, the churches are for prayer only. And with prayer, you cannot stop it. So, but then, I mean, it became a legal issue, but later on they withdrew. Similarly, I had to face the same kind of question from the Muslim community in Delhi itself. In Delhi, at four places, they started praying, and there was some political support also for that time. I opposed it, but they said, no, this is, I mean, Masjid Mosque is, I mean, the Chaudhary Mateen was there. I mean, he was the MLA of, Silampur. It was he who was in front of the whole thing. And he came, and along with him, there was a lot of political interference also. They came, they raised the same question which you raised. And I think that the best thing is, you know, we should not allow any particular community. We should not have any exception on the basis of the Prana Pratishtha. If you take the issue of the Prana Pratishtha, they will also bring up some kind of rules from their own religious book. So let us not get into that thing. We have to have a common this one, rules and regulation. Let us follow that one, and that is the best thing. As I say it as a person who knows the pulses of the whole thing, because many community will raise it, the same kind of issue. Let us not get into that thing, that kind of argument.
Mr. Mohammed, Dr. Swami, go ahead.
Yeah, a short question. See, in the Ram Dharmavati issue, ultimately, the Muslim community accepted to build a masjid in Faizabad, which is now, I think, called Ayodhya. Yeah. They wanted some funding for it, which was given by the court. I don't see why, when you can read namaz anywhere, why the Muslims in the case of Kashi Vishwanath, Gyanvyapur, not accept another place to build a masjid. I'm really trying to ask you the psychology. It's not a masjid, is, you know, it's not that in Turkey, for example, to build a road, they demolish masjids or strip them. Same thing in Saudi Arabia. Why is it that in our country, Muslims are so rigid when it comes to shifting a mosque, which will be built entirely at the state's expense? And not many, I mean, these two, Krishna Janmabhoomi and Kashi Vishwanath, do you think that the average Muslim is of a view that could not give a niche on this issue? Or it is only the people who are playing the leadership role who are making it very hard?
What I feel is that if we can have a dialogue with Muslim community directly, as you had taken up this issue with so many people, because I know,
yes,
because you had taken up this question you had taken up this Ubaid Sahab se also, and many other people you had taken up it. We should, Muslim community will realize the thing. Because in the case of Ayodhya also, Muslim community, I had spoken to a lot of Muslim community at that time. I was in Aligarh Muslim University at that time. So I know the pulse of the Muslim community at that time. And I was fighting with Irfan Abi, but BJP and RSS were supporting him at that time. So up to 1988, yes, up to 1988.
So,
yes, ups and downs I have seen. So this, if we speak to them, I mean, so I know that the Muslim community also wanted to, I mean, hand it over to this one Hindu community at that time. And I also spoke to, because I know, while I was in at that time in Oman for some time for an excavation under UNESCO. So at that time, some of the people who came to know, I mean, most of the people in the, when I went to the hotel, because most of the people there working were from Kerala, and they were all associated with SIMI, that extreme the Muslim organization. They invited me for a lecture. I said, I'm ready to come, but you know, you should not create any problem. I'll speak, I mean, what I have seen. And I spoke for 1 hour, and they were all convinced that Muslims should hand it over. And then this extreme, the so-called extreme Muslim, and four of them, they took me to a separate room. And then they asked me, why don't you speak this thing to Sayyid Shahabuddin Sahab? I mean, the way you have explained to us, that was the, there were 71 people, except one person who was, I mean, very belligerent at that time. All of them agreed with me. And then they took me, four of them took me to another room. And then I said that I don't know Sayyid Shahabuddin Sahab. But then later on, there was an issue because, you know, in which he had sent a letter to some other ministers, and that letter came to me. And I took a very principled stand against a Hindu MLA. His name is Jawahar Prasad, who had engrossed into Sher Shah Suri's Makbara. So there he wrote a letter appreciating my stand. And then I wrote him a reply, and in which I explained the whole thing. And then he called me. I mean, because when he came to Patna, he called me, invited me, and then we had a lot of discussion. I said that they should be handed over to Hindu community, sir. And if you go for any kind of excavation, that will be creating further problem for you. Because all these people who are advising you, they are simply historian. They don't know what you are going to get. But I know, I mean, once you go for the excavation, you would be getting so many other things also. And what that would be embarrassing for me. But at that time, he was with those people. He wanted to come to a kind of this one, I mean, give and take. But somehow there was a certain, yeah. So that was the problem.
But the white paper,
Mr. K.K. Mohammed, you have disclosed the secret by which Sayyid Shahabuddin, I hope people don't get confused with some other Sayyid Shahabuddin, but the Sayyid Shahabuddin, ex-IFS officer and who was the Janata Party, you seem to have had a good effect on him, because whatever you said, he, in an exchange of letters with Dr. Subramaniam Swami, he has said that if it is proved that it is a Hindu temple, I myself will advocate for its restoration. He has said it to Dr. Swami. In fact, Dr. Swami took him to Kanchi Shankaracharya, Shankaracharya. And Dr. Swami had taken him there, and he was very visibly moved by the meeting with Shankaracharya.
He's
very encouraging to know about all this background.
Yes. And there are many things
Dr.
like
Swami,
this.
I interrupted you.
It's like this one.
No problem. Hey, I was more or less going to say that.
Mr. K.K. Mohammed,
but
one
this
question.
Is a very important information for all of us, because many people, they don't know about all these things.
Yeah, I must release my letters to
Yes.
Over a period, he changed.
So there is a question from one of our viewers from Mumbai.
Yes.
It's on the screen, because it's a related subject. We would like you to give us some broad idea.
Can you explain how carbon dating process is used for finding out the archaeological?
I think this question would be precisely in the case of Gyan Vapi. I think the court has gone wrong, because, you know, the Shivalinga cannot be dated on the basis of the carbon dating. It cannot be dated.
There's no biological element in it.
There is no biological, because, you know, you have to get the carbon material from there. And which, of course, you cannot get it. I mean, I don't know who advised the parties also, who advised this, the Honorable Court also. You just cannot, do any kind of dating unless you get some organic contents from there. one cannot take the thing. And that is, I think, what the ASI has also given that reply, perhaps, if I'm right.
Mr. KK Mumbai, I have one other question. We've seen where the malaise of ASI has turned out today, but is there a possibility of a private-public partnership? Do you think it is good, or do you believe that ASI should stay as it is?
No, ASI can, of course, take the public-private partnership. But, first of all, you have to strengthen the whole organization. The infrastructure is very weak, Archaeological Survey of India. There are not enough officers. And you have to, as I said, you have to carry out excavations at so many places. Many places, because of this rapid urbanization, you are losing a number of your historical places. Excavate this place, present it in such a neat and peaceful, and then you have to have an interpretation center in all the places. For example, I can give you, if you can give me, 2-3 minutes, I can just tell you. You go to Nalanda University, the great Nalanda University, where, it was before the Bologna University, it was before the Oxford University, it was before the Cambridge University.
Yeah.
Cambridge University came in the 12th century, and then the other one 13th century, Bologna, of course, in 11th century. And 700 years before that, we had such a great university like Nalanda University. But a person who goes to this Nalanda University, he simply see some bricks are there, some structures are there. He just walk over that one, and then he say, though, we had a big university, and he just come there. That should not be the way we are taking the treating the people. First of all, after taking the tickets, you take them to an interpretation center, show them a film about the magnificence of this great university, because it was the university, it was to this place earlier, Lord Buddha, at that time it was not a university, where he had come and sat. Ekam Samayam Bhagava Nalandayam Viharadi Pavari Gamravan. Because Lord Buddha, during his walk from the Rajgir to other places, he used to come and sit here. So he should feel that he is walking over the same holy earth on which Lord Buddha had walked. And it was the same university where Huang Zhang in 7th century had traveled 16,000 kilometers to come and study in Nalanda University. And we had three great libraries, Ratnaganja, Ratnodadi, Ratnasagara, magnificent libraries, which were destroyed by Bhaktiyar Khilji. And Huang Zhang, when he went from here, he had taken 756 manuscripts on 20 horses from this great university. Similarly, Yip Sing, man from China, he had taken 400 important books. So if you say all these things and, show them a small 10-15 minutes documentary, and then very well informed guide, he should take over. They should not leave them, the tourists like that one. He should take them from place to place and put a tongue in each and every stone, in each and every brick. And the whole Nalanda will come out alive before him. And when he goes out of the university, he would be, completely a rejuvenated person. His Kundalini would be raised. So we have to have every monument should be a place of repair work for us. It should be a place where our Kundalini would be raised. That should be. But the government of India, they have miserably failed to do all these things. In all the monuments, every monument should be that kind of center. That is what my pleading.
Incidentally, near Nalanda, there's a railway station called Bhaktiapur. So we are still celebrating.
Yes, that is the most. Yes,
I'm really
the strange irony of fate. I call it.
To the Prime Minister on it, no action.
So, Mr. Mohammed, before we conclude, there are two questions that we want to. One is about the Ram Setu. What is the ASI? Not the current ASI. In general, the authenticity of Ram Setu, because Dr. Swami has already proved it.
I don't know what is the attitude of the Archaeological Survey of India. Survey of India is a scientific organization. So they have to do underwater excavation should be carried out in all these places. But what I feel is it should be protected as a natural heritage. because and UNESCO has got two wings, I mean, two important things. One is the man-made heritage, and the other one is natural heritage. So as a student of archaeology, my I will not recommend like sir that it should be protected as a man-made heritage. My pleading is that it should be protected as a natural heritage of the country, and that it should come under UNESCO. So because it is such a very important thing, it should be protected that way as a natural heritage.
Okay. The second thing is, how do we establish the, I mean, well, there's one other, if we can't do carbon dating for the shivling, how do we prove the authenticity or the age of the Gyanwapi shivalinga?
No, I mean, the best thing is, I mean, of course, you can go to scientific method because, you know, there are thermoluminescence dating is there. So by thermoluminescence dating, the bricks and other things, I mean, that could be dated. Bricks, if it is bricks. If it is pottery, you can go to thermoluminescence dating. There are no, I mean, the scientific world has developed many other dating also. So, I mean, that thermoluminescence dating would be the best method for these things and for the excavation also.
Okay. Jagdish, do you have anything else, Dr. Swami?
No, I think we have come to the end of our program. Yeah. Ramesh ji, you can wind up.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mohammed ji, and thank you, Dr. Swami. We had a very interesting discussion today. Very timely, because there's a lot of things going on. I think Dr. Mohammed, he placed the subject very clearly, very objective views. We heard very objective views from him. I hope we can do some more of these as we move forward. Thank you, viewers, for joining as usual in good numbers. The thanks for the support team, the technical team behind this to put these things, because it's every week. It's not easy. We think this through. We to pick up the subjects and we spend time to get these things. So a big thanks to the technical team as well. Next week, we'll again meet you with another very interesting topic. And thank you again. Thank you all. And we'll see you next week. Mohammed, if you don't mind, just wait for a second. I have, we have some things to cover.
Okay. Yeah.